All brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future Series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you and you're welcome.
KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, special programming for Black History and Future Month.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Watlala bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin, Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationship to each other and the living world. We establish and support harmony within ourselves and set the stage for practice.
In celebration of Black History and Future Month, KBOO is hosting a weekly series every Friday at 6 p.m. throughout the month of February. We'll hear from Black creators about a variety of topics ranging from arts, culture, abolition, media, and more. This week, I speak with master artist Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., a Black Italian queer non-binary artist who practices primarily in America. Their collaborative approach results in artwork by and for the people. Michael is also one of the co-hosts and administrator for Tin Can Phone Podcast, a KBOO program created by and for folks who have been or are currently incarcerated. The show discusses life after prison, life inside, and contemporary policies like the non-unanimous jury campaign. You can listen to Tin Can Phone Podcast every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland. For KBOO Community Radio, this is Tammy Hupteus.
I am Michael, formerly findable on the internet as master artist Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., and I am a co-host of a show called Tin Can Phone that I co-anchor with Queez, Adi, and Blue, two compatriots that we met in a carceral context, and together we work to put on the show Tin Can Phone Podcast.
Can you talk a bit about the podcast and your vision around it and what it's been like working on it?
Yeah, that's where the preface of Master Artist maybe makes sense. At some point, someone's gonna be like, man, is he still talking about this? I think it's complex for me. I think in general, it's entertaining. I think in general, the folks I'm working with are talented. And these are, I guess, the season two hosts. There were other hosts, Armand and Joe, in season one, and are like interesting and talented guys in their own right. And so again, entertaining, but also like informative and introspective about the positionality of being someone grappling with surviving a post-carceral life. And it's interesting, the history of the podcast, and hopefully this is a theme on the show, that we like dream of liberating the founding content, which was essentially recorded inside prison together and remains owned by the Department of Corrections, and due to, at this point, some form of negligence on our part to continue pursuing, but is a labored thing that now everyone who's currently producing the show is just out of prison, and we're able to record. And it's interesting because this all began before COVID hit. So we were like, yes, let's get in the studio. We got all the mics, we got all the stuff. And then COVID hit, and maybe even more accessibly, we began to record on Zoom. And so, yeah, like a more complex theme in the show is just making the show is not just an opportunity for some guys to do a cool thing. So that's cool. It is a platform about the particular social issue of post-carceral life, or carceral life, but is this steeped in the experience of the post-carceral experience. But it is also, I think, opportunities for anyone are good. Opportunities for folks who the struggle might not even be like, oh, they're struggling to avoid crime or they're struggling with drugs. It's like, they applied to a bunch of jobs and didn't get them, or their record is holding them back from this or whatever. It's not easier. It's not like getting a degree at Harvard. It's kind of like being denied from the opportunity that if the statistical forces of the world are working in perfect order, you might just get a little bit more not good. And so this is like a red carpet kind of scenario where I am investing as an administrator to support their action around enacting it as a project. So it's kind of like a lab in a way, where everyone getting to hear it is like a cool output of this project, but them being able to facilitate and make admin choices and be able to claim being a co-host of a podcast on their CV and to start cultivating a CV. So there's that kind of immediately draftable professional opportunity for the co-host of the show. We invite guests, and so we're like really pushing the range of perspective to listeners, but also people with post-carceral lives as a guest, that's an opportunity of a kind. They're also able to claim that. They're also able to rub elbows with guys who are organizing and building community, but we also pay them. And in fact, we just, today, like yesterday sort of, but also today, we got the confirmation email, we got another grant. And so I'm like able to kind of admin on that. They're able to see and weigh in on that process, make decisions. And then we like get money. And a lot of that money is just paid to them for producing the show and paid to guests for being on the show. And so again, kind of that meta layer for me, like, why am I doing this? It's also doing this, but it's highly invisible maybe to the listener, is that I'm over here, you know, again, the master artist kind of reference. I rarely get to touch paintbrushes, though sometimes, and that's nice. But a lot of the time is like computery, admin organizing, social organizing, collaborating with these guys. And through that, we're able to like create a fiscal pipeline. And so that is sort of one of the things that we're like, can this project do this? And at this point is now very exciting that we've created this platform, a political platform, a social platform, an empowerment platform that is exciting to funders, and through that funding, able to like compensate the life of people who have, you know, precarious or limited employment and other personal social costs, etc. So yeah, that's what we're doing in a, as a mechanism. But as a show, yeah, we're talking about, you know, trying to get a job, staying employed, emotional stuff, holidays, you know, it's deep and rich. And I think that's another thing that's really exciting is like, there's no sort of pre-qualification for these guys. It's just their personal life experience. So it's as diverse as there are people who ends up on the show.
Can you talk a little bit about that transition from producer, master artist to more of like an admin role and what that's been like for you?
Sure. I think that's an interesting question that in my graduate program at PSU, that's like a major existential dilemma. Like, I want to do this thing with people, and unless I'm like painting them, I probably need to like get on the spreadsheet. And so it's frustrating, not like, man, I spent all day at the office. It's frustrating, I think, in a more conceptual way where it's like, yes, prison liberation, like, let me get on the spreadsheet. And I wish I actually could fact check myself, but there is an artist project that ended up shutting down a prison, and they were invited somewhere to do some talk. A friend of mine was recounting this interview, and they said that like, yeah, like here, let me share my screen. And it was like a spreadsheet. Like this is it. Like it was talking to people and organizing and put them in places, and you do this and you do that and go pick it here and go send this file there. And so when you get into this, like, I guess this is maybe a fun story. When I was learning about art, you know, they teach it and they're like, yeah, Diego Rivera, he like painted the revolution. And you're like, man, you just the paintbrushes and then revolution. Yes, I like this. Like, I want to do that. And then, you know, you deepen your knowledge and art history and all the things, and like different artists, Keith Haring, and they were like adjacent to these struggles, and the struggles were, they were within them or enacted on them. But the larger social movements were like many hands and many other things happening. And so when you kind of queer that with your artistry, it starts to take on these very traditional things that you need to do, like email this guy and, you know, we have a producer for the show, thank God. And I like have the grant and I paid him, and we're like paid in advance, you know, shout out buddy. And so like, I can just even do some of this admin stuff, which is also like in being collaborative with folks who don't have expertise. It's like explaining it and like providing the information so they can make the right choice for the project and for themselves. And that means, you know, recently I produced that piece on MLK in the move of the Harriet Tubman School, and I have the skills to produce the show, but that's like a whole nother job. And so wanting the show to happen, and I was the one who was like in the prison, so, and before that happened, you know, I was like getting my paperwork and going to the training, and then you can get in the prison, and then you're like, I want to bring a recorder in, you got to talk to the guy, you get this check sheet, you come in, and there's all these layers that require me to be at a computer and be in communication and compliance and have a clean record and all this kind of stuff that, you know, the paintbrushes again are kind of like sitting more on the shelf, and the actual minutia of enacting this thing that does result in a form of entertainment that's also a political social platform was like some paper pushing. And so I think I'm really excited about the project and how it's turning out. And again, getting that grant recently, you know, the guys don't know, and I guess it's happening, but they probably don't listen to KBOO, but like at, right at the time when this is airing. But yeah, we got the grant and it means they get paid more money, but, you know, was just like, you know, wasn't sure it was coming and all the stuff. But that is actually what I, you know, when I set out to be going into the prison, I didn't go in saying I wanted to make a podcast. I went in and was working with the ideas the guys had, and Armand was like, man, these guys inside, they have these stories. They don't even know how good the story is and how rich it is. In fact, they're taught to be like ashamed of these life experiences that are like hard, or, you know, all this stuff that's really intense actually, or not, you know, but often yes. And I think for me, when I first went in, that wisdom was so rich. And I was like, wow, I'm like, this is like a gold mine or like an oil field. You're like, it's like spraying out of the ground. You're like, oh my God, how do we capture this? And so, you know, we collaborated by taking the pre-existing interest that later, and actually specifically with the support of KBOO, because it wasn't until KBOO had signed on that the prison was like, okay, yes, let's this happen. And so then it kind of became a show, but my original intention was like, hey, you guys are oppressed, like how can I help? And I learned that this format was accessible and exciting and was the right format for getting the individual voices to an audience that is like the kind of prison fence prevents people. And so, you know, by it's, that's all cool, but also like, especially when they get out, but also when they're in, you know, when they're in there might make like $30 a month or something absurd. And when they're out, they might be on struggling to achieve a minimum wage lifestyle for various reasons, including just like not being able to find employment that will accept, you know, or employment, they're employed, but their employment opportunity is oppressive and debilitating. And so to be able to be like, oh, cool, you want to come talk for an hour for $100? And like, that's a super powerful, if it was a paintbrush, it would be like, bam, take that, like oppression over for today. It's like dinner solved, rent for tomorrow, we did it. And so like, that was my reason for trying to get involved and using my skills and abilities to create the bridge for people to be able to solve their immediate problems. That's what I'm interested in. The fact that they also, you know, us, we're getting ready, we're starting season two, is also like a form of therapy to get together and to have that conversation. Because usually people are disparately located. When you release, you gotta release to somewhere. You might be far from resources. So this medium is like accessible to everyone and therapeutic and valuable, But yeah, one of the, and so it has all of these wonderful, like, intrinsically positive things. But for me, one of the best parts about it that are also, because the show could exist with zero admin. Like, we could just show up, press record, no editing, no touching it up and put it out there. But it's interesting too, because you have to actually dress it up a little and make it entertaining for people to, like, want to consume it. So to really, like, get the message out and for the platform to be effective, which is what my collaborators are interested in, it's gotta have a producer and someone who has time to produce. And the person who has time to produce, who has skills to produce, needs to be paid, and they need to be paid for their time. And so the role that I must assume to get all these pieces to occur is, like, the administrative one.
What got you in touch with the prisons to begin with? Like, was it a program? Was it, like, something through school? Was it just volunteering? Like, what provoked you to do that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a form of volunteering. When I moved to Oregon, I came out here for graduate school at PSU. It's called the Art and Social Program at PSU. And it's for anyone who may have no knowledge of art or various things that it is or is similar to. It is kind of like art and, like, social work, which is, like, my director will be turning in his, you know, armchair if he's listening. But it, because, you know, in also a way, due to that crossover moment, we have no expectations for output. So, like, a social worker is, like, paid and trained and has certain training. And also, like, if you're doing socially engaged art, you may not be working in a context that social workers work, but it's, like, a helpful kind of, like, ice cream sandwich of, like, what it's doing. It's, like, a lot of art. The philosophies are art are, like, complex in a way that may, again, have nothing to do with materials. Or while you're making a material thing, you're like, yeah, I was thinking about science when I was using the stone. And so you're imbuing meaning into something that's visual. And so socially engaged art, or social forms, I like to say, like, you know, there's sculptural forms, or, you know, illustration or visual. And so social forms is, like, kind of like a reference to a kind of media spectrum. Like, new media is a spectrum of kind of, like, video and sound. And so social forms, you may be drawn to them for any reason. And personally, I'm drawn to them. I was particularly drawn to this kind of making and ultimately the graduate program in Portland, being specifically interested in working with and collaborating with and producing work for young people in general, and particularly, like, in general, like, literally anything. A lot of my interests are, like, imaginative creation. And so I have a sculptural background, and it was like, cool, like, let's make a thing, like, let's imagine it and make it. And, like, being interested in imbuing some of these ideals into, like, educational modules. So people are kind of growing. And part of the reason for this was, like, as a sculptor, and again, referencing the kind of Diego Rivera, like, I was interested in the work that I was doing to be, like, very tied into social movements and social ills and gaps in service. And I was doing not-for-profit work and volunteer community work and all kinds of stuff. And over time, I've been honing that in a more focused way, maybe also as a prism, so in a few different focused ways. And so when I came out, the prison was something that the program was already kind of working in that context. And I remember, I tell this story often, I think this is on season one, episode one. So there was, like, a talent show at the prison, and I went, it was maybe the first time I was going. And I was, like, there, and it was kind of like, I don't know, the first day of school, sort of, where you're, like, there and you're like, I don't know any of this, but I'm here and stuff's happening. And it was interesting. I mean, I'm a comfortable person, so I didn't, there's a lot of, like, within the context, like, people having expectations or, like, being ready to be afraid or whatever. And I was just like, you know, everyone I was near was hyper normalizing it. I was like, cool, like, I don't have any reason to believe this is going to be, like, vicious and scary. And so the opposite occurred, where I'm, like, in the cafeteria and it's just guys, which, I mean, I now have a very hyper casual experience to the context that remains very stigmatized to, like, most humans. And so I was there, and the mood was, like, very jovial. Like, it was, they were, like, having a special moment. It was a talent show, so guys were just like singing songs and telling jokes and just doing stuff. And so it was, I guess it's like probably good for the story, but even prior to that moment though, so I was sitting waiting for all that to happen in the cafeteria, and I was sitting next to a peer in the program, and we were talking, and they just very casually mentioned, and it was while I was getting to know the Portland ecosystem, which I now know to be like pretty specific and referential to itself with all quadrants of it. So I do work also at King School, which is in the Alberta district, which is specifically Dr. Martin Luther King School, specifically historically Black elementary school. And at the time I was also just getting started there. And this peer of mine who just had a newborn baby, yay. She mentioned that CRCI, Columbia River Correctional Institution, that for anyone who doesn't know is in Portland city limits. And if you take 33rd North, you'll pass it at the end. It's like right there, the bus goes to it. It's like very there. You would never probably go otherwise. You would certainly almost drive past it otherwise, and probably certainly almost have. But yeah, it's findable. You can Google it, CRCI. And so we were there, and she was saying that this particular prison has a school to prison pipeline with King. And so it was this weird statistical, obviously statistical anomalously not in a good way situation, where I was sitting there and then looking at these people just sing songs and have a good time. And I was like, I like became captivated in that moment and continued to show up and continued to like just witness and did a lot of different things. There was a comedy class, and you know, all of these things occurred kind of in this gateway that was like an art in residence. It was kind of like the guys could sign up for the class, and when in the class they were thinking about their time inside as being an artist in residence. And so in that container there was a bunch of stuff happening, and it really took a while until I felt like I knew what was wanted or needed. And it was actually the very early foundation of Tin Can Phone, which was actually a project specifically related to the stories and those interviews, that with this new money, we may finally finish the publication, but was the whole thing. And that was like multiple years between the talent show and the first recorded story. And it's now been like 3-ish plus years since that first recorded story, or like even sometime after that, since Tin Can Phone has been like recording and releasing episodes. So it's been a very long road, and that is actually like the nature of the work, is this form of, at least specifically for me, like figuring out what the perfect thing is. And I don't even know if that's totally true yet, but it's starting to really take off participatorily and financially. And there have been various things before this, but yeah, it kind of slowly became the right thing. And the thing maybe I was thinking before is like, while I was like part of a school program or something, everyone in the program, and myself included, we were just volunteers. So anyone, especially prior to COVID, could just be like, hey, I'd like to volunteer and go through the process and all the stuff. And so like getting into prison is totally something that can happen. And we hope that Tin Can Phone as a platform starts to shape people's perception of being able to be involved in the situation, which, you know, all of us kind of lost a compatriot during COVID. He got out after like 25 years during COVID. And due to various factors, including like just a hyper proximity to precarity, I remember I was like on a call and I ran into him, and he was driving, delivering pizzas, but he like had a car and he was like felt, and then he like got in a wreck and he just was fine, but didn't have a car, and then whatever. And, you know, he ended up overdosing, and it was just like the world is not ready to catch. It's just not. You know, I was driving somewhere today and saw that they were sweeping another block of houseless people. I've seen people that I knew inside houseless. I've seen them like go off their meds and kind of disappear. And so you don't even have to be in prison to work on this. And then, you know, after all the various things and like the kind of losses, and even some sort of, whether it's just sticking to it or some innate talent or something that makes me relatable, there was a lot of women who were also coming in and supporting in that way, but it gets like less structured when they leave prison. And so has required a lot of kind of like, you know, I've taken people to rehab and like other forms of really getting my hands dirty. And so, you know, at this point, I don't know what it means to just like step away. Not that I'm even entertaining it, but as a part of my artistic practice or lifestyle. And at this point, it's also like one of the things I did was like copy edit someone's CV. And their CV had a bunch of stuff that we did on it. And so, and like they recently wrote me a recommendation for a job. And so continuing to support, and actually we just used the namesake of Tin Can Phone to send a letter with a mom going to Louisiana to try to get her kid released to Oregon, saying like, oh, we want to interview them. We have some opportunities, and we're able to use our network to offer that. And so, you know, it's not the same as going into prison, but it is like a form of effective, like being able to send guys in prison $100 to exhibit their artwork, which is a project called Gallery Blue. It functions very similar to Tin Can Phone, except it's an art gallery. That's an incredibly powerful mechanism. And again, that gets back to the admin. It's like, I need to like contact the guy and put it in a spreadsheet and make sure the check goes through. And so, yeah, I mean, that's how I got involved. And it's interesting because it may take a little bit less time than working with kids, because there's a lot of like preparation that goes into working with kids, but it is like highly effective, where like with kids, you're like, gotta wait a few years. But with the guys, it's like, well, I paid rent. And so, you know, it works into my professional lifestyle to work on this slowly but surely.
That's awesome. Yeah, building relationships is like, that's when you build that trust, it's really like you can build worlds together. So for folks that are maybe not familiar with Tin Can Phone, and you know, now they are because they're listening to this and they'll probably tune in every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. What are some of the takeaways that you want listeners to walk out with, considering that they're probably being exposed to a world and to a whole perspective that they aren't familiar with, or folks kind of like delivering their stories where, like you said, they've been told to keep it quiet or honestly to be ashamed of it? What do you really hope to accomplish with this? And what are some of the biggest takeaways that you want folks to walk away with?
Yeah, there's some things that come immediately to mind. So like, I feel like I have a trained politic, and then maybe it gets more esoteric. So one of the founding ideals for the show, which is interesting too, working with guys in like, there's an infinite range of like professional education or professional experience. And so like ideas are never coming in a spreadsheet. You know, I'm literally like listening and then turning it into that as the admin test, but you know, or maybe like handwritten. But you know, one of the early ideas that Quees expressed being high, like a motivation for him, was we are not monsters is the phrase. And that, you know, media essentially characterizes people who are in prison or have had carceral experience as like monstrous. And it is that super predatorizing and that kind of like aversion or discomfort that is like highly destabilizing, because, you know, our friend Ben, who, you know, recently passed away, was like harmless, just needing a friend or just needing someone who cares or is struggling with something that's not necessarily like harmful to other people, but isn't easy. It's like, oh, this person isn't enriching me, so I'm gonna, and it's like more like, oh, this relationship is hard, but also I believe in liberation, like not just like penal liberation, but like, you know, if you see a houseless person or you think education should be accessible or whatever, it's like there are people who are just a little bit away from this resource. It's like maybe they could go to PCC, but they don't know how, and they need someone to help, but like they're dyslexic, and so whatever thing that. So anyway, you know, not making monstrous people. So yeah, so you can like skip listening to the show, and if you take that, you're getting like one of the founding pillar elements, that the hope was that through kind of making more clear, just listening to these guys talk for, you know, if you listen the whole season one, it's like 12 hours of really getting to know some folks. And that kind of quickly makes them not less threatening once you like hear and understand their stories. So that's like one of the key paragon number one. I think another very contemporary political issue is there's actually a senator, right to your senator campaign about non-unanimous jury, which is no longer legal in this country, but was continued to be something that was allowed and constitutional in Oregon and Louisiana, like up until recently.
I think it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago. That is recent. Interesting thinking about that timeline. It's like during COVID. So even, I mean, and organizing in general is hard. Organizing now is like super hard, but like the timed life of writing in and making sure we get this worked out is like soon. So like check that out. But it's particularly interesting as one of the hosts continues to very strongly champion that issue as someone who was convicted in a non-unanimous jury. And the time cannot be given back, though there are people who are remain incarcerated who were in on a non-unanimous jury. And this kind of current like rebuff, which is totally political. We have an episode about it, so you should listen. I think it's like Ellen Rosenblum. Like there's characters and there's a little bit of like corrupt stuff. It's just not good. And it's like, people don't know about it. And we're like, hey, like this is totally happening. And the history is Googleable. And it like was particularly anti-Black and anti-Semitic. And it was is decided as unconstitutional because it's unconstitutional, but it was actually specifically racist before it was just unconstitutional. And so, you know, it's just way not bad, not good. And so we were like, hey, stop it. So that's another very contemporary issue, takeaway, need, want, desire. And I think both of those are like the current hosts of the show. Those are important issues to them. So when you're like, oh, whether you, it's like those things at least. When it, to me, and I think my interest is more esoteric where like Ben in particular, and others whose content remain in under bondage, but Ben is a character that has been mentioned in the legacy of Tin Can Phone and is recorded on episode one, right after he got out. It's so humbling and fascinating. I have no words because there are no words. When we were doing those interviews inside, the amount of vulnerability that was coming out, like of these guys who have been in prison for like tens of years and they never cry or they cry in secret or other weird stuff where they're like contorting their human experience in order to like just survive the circumstances, which survive not like, you know, running through the halls with like food in their mouth so they don't get stabbed, but just like other forms of precarious, unhuman conditions that are highly uncomfortable and start to affect the psyche. And like in order to survive, like some of the voices that we were interested in kind of sifting through and raising up while in this situation were extremely mind-bendingly, awe-inspiringly perceptive ways of knowing the human experience. And I was just like, wow, I mean, this is amazing. Like I'm having an amazing experience just being in conversation with what is happening. And it's interesting because even though those interviews remain unheard, my primary audience in all this work is the collaborators. Though the work that we do has an audience, and that work that people can see and people liking it, getting money, all of those are other moving parts, but the things that are invisible remain important to me and sometimes are never seen. And so when we were recording those interviews, they were a form of kind of therapeutic gathering, and guys started like hanging out and listening in. And so, and it was like a form of like proper like educational exchange or social, everyone who was listening, investing a wealth of like empathy and engagement in this vulnerable individual. And so that kind of happens. People don't even need to listen for that to happen. Though if you are listening, witnessing it is its own magical feat. And so I would say that it, as a highly nuanced and infinitely expanding property of the project, that is very important to me.
Looking to the future, like what do you hope to, like not what you hope the end game to be, but like where do you see this going in the next like 3 years?
It's interesting with this money coming in right now, like as a project, until very recently, it wasn't paying me, which was like never a goal. In fact, me being compensated was like voted on by the participants and is like not an important part in my reason for being involved. However, in the kind of rigidity of administration, the amount of moments of space-time continuum that I have to administrate, because it's like we could record the show and like chop it up and hang out, like that's fun, but like downloading the episode and sending it to the producer and making sure it gets in, like that then is like I can only do a specific volume of the different moving parts. However, if it starts to in the amount of pay for a fraction of my time to start representing real household income for the hosts specifically, as well as being a stronger engine for other folks. And so a thrust in season two is kind of chasing the dragon on original dream of the project, which was essentially through KBOO. It is a form of transmission that's like government approved that they can receive. And so we are really, you know, broadcasting for the people, as Quiz says. And so, you know, hope that it can be a resource as like a culturally specific form of entertainment or validation for currently incarcerated guys or anyone else, and even families of incarcerated people, like being a database for the thing that their traumatized family member can't navigate, you know, and also being a community where people who don't have, they can't interact with their family or they don't have family or whatever, can kind of like lean on this collective that at this time is sort of, it's not ephemeral, it's actually a little bit everlasting, but it's intangible. But like many years past, we used to like meet, and even that was like challenging in ways, but you know, finding the way that it exists, you know, a lot of guys are like on Facebook. They're like, oh yeah, get me on Facebook. So it's like this form of communication that is appropriate for them, but I'm like beyond interaction of that medium. So, you know, some dreams between kind of Gallery Blue and any other, like, cause I do other work that's very behind the scenes. It doesn't have like a name or whatever, but small projects that are able to get money in guys' pockets or whatever, and legal projects. But like through this whole arm, you know, Tin Can Phone, I think, is one of my more well-funded projects. Like youth, I mean, yeah, it's competitive with various youth projects or other larger scale things, just in like number of attention or how easily it grabs people's attention. And so specifically for my post-carceral work, it kind of like affords me spending time doing it that puts other projects or other people in positions to get experience or money or opportunity or whatever. And so, you know, this mom reached out to someone who got them in touch with me, and we're able to write letters, right? So it's this platform that is like funded for me to kind of do this work elsewise. And kind of one of the dreams is that we get enough whatever vibe or ephemeral energy or whatever the powers that need, where we're able to get a form of funding to like hire a like caseworker. So we're able to like use art as a medium to create and like all the other great stuff that I said. And then they're like, hey, do you want money? And we're like, yes, we want to provide a social service. And so that's kind of the dream, because like, you know, when we're collaborating with guys, like here's $100, like maybe we'll have another thing in 3 or 5 months or whatever. And so it's not helpful, but the interest is to create the engine where it's like, yes, 12 months out of the year, if you call us, we'll be like, let's get you on food stamps or whatever. But I super don't have time for that. And it's not because of a lack of want. I wish I did have the time just to get guys like cell phones and food stamps. But, you know, that's why there's like executive directors and boards or whatever. And this is kind of, you know, in this, yes, we got that grant. And we also like got fiscal sponsorship. Like, thank you, Southeast Uplift and Kirk Rea in the past. So these like different not-for-profit people who are, you know, there's all these hands. And so the goal is that the project can just remain freely creative in the way that it is, but it's become so celebrated that it's bringing in money that allows us to produce an infrastructure for at least those who are working on the project, if not starting to like further extend that to be sustainable to like just guy who is needing, wanting support, help, etc.
And looking to the future, like, what do you hope to, like not what you hope the end game to be, but like, where do you see this going in the next, like, 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, we could talk about this forever, and maybe we will into the years. But just reflecting on what you said, like, we had a meeting recently, and you're like, oh, I'm listening to the show. And in the COVID era of just, like, who knows what people are doing, but was actually so stabilizing many times through the various years of this project, where different administrators at KBOO, that existing has been truly inspiring. Like, when I was going into prison, I was like, yes, KBOO said yes. And I was like, oh my God, yes, someone cares. And so that has been really powerful. But I wanna like raise that up as like a very accessible example for to anyone, where like it was, you had this particular resource, and in an interesting way, that resource was kind of like a studio and mics and all that stuff. And then it was like, not that, but even the resource of like support was invaluable and provided, like, you know, people would come to the class to work on this project, and it gave them stability inside, and it gives them stability outside. And now it's like, through watering that seed has kind of created a scenario where we have a thriving thing. And so it's like, anyone, water the seeds, you know, be less afraid, educate yourself, challenge yourself. It really makes a difference in the various people that I've worked with in awkward, precarious challenges. They always have some story where like some life-giving human moment. So it could be you. Everyone thinks I'm special. I think I just keep doing stuff that people don't even think about doing, but it could be you.
We just heard from Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., master artist, visionary, and co-host of Tin Can Phone Podcast, which airs here on KBOO every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. To hear a replay of this interview and to learn more about Michael and Tin Can Phone Podcast, go to KBOO.fm and click on the All Thrills, No Frills banner. Consider supporting programming like this and other KBOO programs by donating to KBOO today. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO, that's KBOO, to 44321. You can also send us mail, KBOO Radio at 20 Southeast 8th Ave, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Tune in next Friday at 6 p.m. to hear KBOO's third installment of our Black History and Future Month series, celebrating and honoring Black creators, activists, musicians, artists, both locally and nationally. For the remainder of the hour, we're going to hear a playlist curated by the master artists themselves, Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. Thank you so much for tuning in. For KBOO Radio, I am Tammy Hepteus.
You know, what? When you misfit, like, it's hard to fit in. Hard to, like, open up and, you know, like, explain it, like, tell how you really feel it, you know?
Child of the system, I done been through it all. Foster care, driven now. Yell in the pen, remember nights it was cold. We were sleeping in the park. Watch my sister, she was clutching the spark. Make sure that we ate and we was comfy at the park. Never asked about pops, cause mom played his part. The 90s and they had it, she was hooked on the rock. Imagine that being with her every day. Then you not seen the dust on the gravel. Then they grabbed us, it was over, put up a fight. Till we put that thing off the hustle, which means I was five when I faced my first. Hold up. This is lame, all the niggas to the subtle. While I love the poke up every day, I got the roll up, but it's just numb. In the pain instead of face, and my traumas, I stay locked in the game, which had me locked in the chains. While I now with the game. It's a time for my fam. Daughter barely know me, won't even hold her daddy hand. One day she'll understand that it wasn't daddy plan. Mama playing with your games and she ran to the man. Check the pictures out, you will see it was us. It was always me and you and daddy, you can trust. I'll lay my life down if a nigga play around. Presence is the best present, so I promise I'ma stay down.
Right. I got so many aspirations and so many dreams and so many things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. But I'm confined because I've always been a prisoner within myself. So happiness is something that's hard for me when every time I call home, one of my homeboys is dead. Every time I call home, my nephew just got killed. My other nephew just finna face life in prison. You know, it's hard to find happiness, but it all starts within. So when I looked at my daughter in her eyes on Saturday, pure happiness, pure. It's my first and only child, so, you know, my baby 10 months now. This is the first time I've ever really felt pure happiness because everything else has been so forced. Everything has, it's just been like, okay, maybe this is a good thing. So, okay, I'm happy, I guess.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you go alone and you by yourself and you want to cry again, was that really happiness? Happiness is something that lives on. Every time you think about it, you get happy. You know, joy. I don't know those things, bruh. Cause they always so forced and they always so fake. I don't know those things.
Was there ever a moment in your life where you can look back upon and you're like, this is what happiness was? This point in life, I am living happiness.
I believe my pure happiness came from when my mama said she was proud of me for the first time.
When was that? Explain that.
Just last year. Nah, it was 2017, man. And, you know, my mom, she's sick. She got a black hole in her brain, so she be having seizures and different things like that. But I sent my mom packages. My first T-shirts came out. I did a deal with these people in India to get my T-shirts made. And I sent my mom the box. I sent her my first mixtape, my first album, major production. And my mom's like, son, I'm proud of you. Like, you really doing something, right? She didn't know the funding came from the streets.
Yeah.
But when she was proud of me, and my brother, for the first time, left California for his first time ever. He's older than me. We had Wills on tour with Filthy Rich, and we performed at the Wild Hall. I got him on stage with me. And afterwards, he said, bro, my first time being able to leave California was off of you doing something good. It wasn't off of you doing no bullshit, bruh. I'm proud of you, bruh. I'm like, man, like, I might really could do this. Like, I'm the one that my family believe in because I take that step. I take that step. You know, my little brother told me music is the only thing you've ever done when you wasn't for sure you would win. I'm not doing nothing if I ain't got a for sure dub at the end. Mm. But with music, you just never know. You know, I see people with a lot more views than me. For real, for real.
Yeah.
It ain't just on the internet push play. Like, my music means something to my family.
Full of wishes, stars align, they says control kisses. Market Street Divas intern for the potter. They struggle the lifestyle from the highest. Some live according to Marvin Gaye's vinyl. Skytop lofts are still next to these projects. In a town full of sin with the keepers. Round the corner is the angels and the reapers. Together, young hitters, call them killers. Living how they feel just to read the next meal. X on the money of the riches. And it goes for those who classify themselves with the vintage. And they all showed up, urban outfitted. Square dovetail fashionista for my knitted. Turntable turns as the gun pops. Don't let the fun rock. This is thoughts of the young man at the bus stop.
I used to be at the bus stop chilling with the punk rocks. You can hear the bass in the street, not red in my veins. Gold under my streets and the wheels on the bus go round and round. The smoke goes up and the ashes go down. I heads up even when the girls go down. And even when it rains, the clouds can't frown. I'm headed to the bus stop with a jazz sound. As I lift the G-Shock from your wrist, I take time to swim what the blind man sees. Waterproof your watch for slippery young thieves who lick shots of broken 40-ounce soliloquies. Hear ye, thrown up from the belly of the beast came the slang dialect from the yellow tape street. Up the Mac like Dino cause of processed beef kicks reflecting rims, seeing where they wanna be. Ben's keys just made of dope keys. And pass racks to cops, they got the keys to the city. Used to stress off the bill, they kept on the energy. Found the energy in a doobie remedy. Chicks moving fastly as they hop off the muni. Lip gloss gossip and mascara jewelry. Bus pass beauty, diamond eyed cutie. She smiles from the window as I miss the bus cruelly. I used to be at the bus stop chilling with the punk rocks. You can hear the bass in the street, not red in my veins. Gold under my streets and the wheels on the bus go round and round. The smoke goes up and the ashes go down. I heads up even when the girls go down. And even when it rains, the clouds can't frown. I'm headed to the bus stop with a jazz sound.
Let the destination breathe, let it breathe. As it takes us to our own desire. We amount from the glory of the rainy days. If you looking in the eyes, the summer is still inside us. We don't know where we going. We are on the bus to chill and just live with the patience. We all got dreams that start at these trenches. Stations, but they end at the heart's destination.
I used to be at the bus stop chilling with the punk rocks. You can hear the bass in the street, not red in my veins. Gold under my streets and the wheels on the bus go round and round. The smoke goes up and the ashes go down. I heads up even when the girls go down. And even when it rains, the clouds can't frown. I'm headed to the bus stop with a jazz sound.
At the bus stop with the punk rocks. clouds can't frown. drop those kids. Get a tank next day through the mill. No mud, I don't wanna go to jail. Get a block in the feast, raise hell. Got 30 egg packs in the freezer. Hot tech rig, got a bottle of liquor. iPhone 2 way in the field. Watch out, say something up to me. Tag in, drop those kids. Get a tank next day through the mill. But no, I don't wanna go to jail. Get a block in the feast, raise hell. Got 30 egg packs in the freezer. Hot tech rig, got a bottle of liquor. iPhone 2 way in the field. Watch out, say something up to me.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO tonight at 8 o'clock for